At 6:20, this is KERA News. I'm Justin Martin. The city of Arlington says it's no longer in the running for Amazon's second headquarters. Arlington was one of several cities that were part of a regional bid for Amazon's so-called HQ2, so North Texas is still pursuing the e-commerce giant. Dallas was among 20 regions named finalists in January. Arlington says it offered nearly $1 billion in incentives to try to land Amazon. That included space at the site of Globe Life Park, where the Texas Rangers are playing until they move to a new ballpark. Amazon expects to make a decision sometime this year on its second headquarters. The goal of China's One Belt, One Road initiative is to create a land route from the country to Europe. This plan would do more than just make travel more efficient, though. Elizabeth Economy is Director for Asia Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. And today on Think, she talked with Chris Boyd about how this project could boost China's influence on the world.
China already controls 76 ports in 35 countries. And despite saying that these are for commercial use only, we've seen in a number of instances that PLA Navy ships have stop by for visits after China takes control of the ports. You know, Xi Jinping is out there pushing Chinese values in African countries, Latin American countries, Southeast Asia, training officials on how to manage populations, how to deal with propaganda. These are the kinds of things that, you know, then will redound back up in terms of global governance. So, you know, Xi Jinping will have allies when he looks to change norms on human rights or when he's pushing for a Chinese vision of internet sovereignty. He will be able to call on a number of countries to support him in ways that previously were not the case. It is possible that you'll see Chinese GPS systems and e-commerce and fiber optic cables and railroads setting the technological and technical standards of the future if the Belt and Road Initiative comes to full fruition. And it's possible that you'll see international institutions more closely reflecting Chinese values and policy priorities and ideals than American ones. So if Xi Jinping sort of can redesign the world, you know, he said back in 2014, he wants China not only to be able to help contribute to write the rules of the game, but to construct the playgrounds on which the games are played. I think if he's able to achieve that, the world will look very different from the way it does today.
Elizabeth Economy is the author of The Third Revolution, Xi Jinping and the New Chinese State. This episode of Think Rares tonight at 10, and you can subscribe to the podcast at think.kera.org. On Tuesdays, KERA's One Crisis Away series examines life on the financial edge. Tonight, we're going to look at Dallas's first comprehensive housing policy. It's designed to encourage more affordable housing and disrupt patterns of segregation and gentrification. The Dallas City Council approved the plan last week. KERA's Eric Austin talked with Stephanie Kuo and Courtney Collins about what the housing policy aims to accomplish and why critics say it's not enough.
So, Courtney, what does the affordable housing shortage look like here in Dallas?
It's important to remember that while Dallas is going through a lot of economic growth, it isn't really translating across the city. 6 out of 10 people are what's known as rent burdened, which means they're spending more than 30% of their income on rent. The city's actually classified as short 20,000 affordable housing units. And in 2017, housing prices kind of showed their true colors. Nearly 58% of home sales at that point were priced between $300,000 and $1 million. So people are kind of running out of affordable neighborhoods.
And Stephanie, this housing policy from Dallas identifies neighborhoods that need the city's attention, and they call them reinvestment zones. And those are broken into three categories. They're redevelopment areas, stabilization areas, and emerging market areas. Why don't you walk us through those three terms?
Yeah, sure. A redevelopment area is basically an area where there's a project that could spur further development already set to begin or in progress within the next year. So the Redbird Mall revitalization is an example of that.
And what about stabilization areas? What are those?
This is an interesting one. So these are neighborhoods where redevelopment threatens to displace the lower income residents who are already there. So the area by the Margaret Hunt Hill Bridge in West Dallas is one of those. Vickery Meadow is another one. The housing policy says these areas need to be zoned to encourage mixed income development, but it needs to also include things like accessory dwelling units, like garage apartments. The whole goal with these areas is to preserve their affordability.
And emerging market areas.
So these are the areas that need a lot of work. Near UNT Dallas and around the Southern Gateway, they need infrastructure, environmental enhancements, code enforcement, and property nuisance abatement, and crime deterrence. All these things need to happen first before any development can happen at all.
Now, Stephanie and Courtney, you've both done a lot of reporting in neighborhoods characterized as stabilization areas, West Dallas and Vickery Meadow. Stephanie, what have residents in Vickery Meadow been struggling with?
Vickery Meadow is often characterized as a second chance neighborhood for new immigrants, undocumented immigrants, refugees, and just those who are generally low income. I have reported that development plans have driven up rents in the area, landlords are evicting tenants, and just this spring, a complex was bought out by Dallas ISD, and the tenants are being forced to leave with very few options inside and outside the neighborhood. These tenants may have criminal records, bad or no credit, eviction histories, so affordable housing for them is especially key, and being displaced would disrupt their lives completely.
And Courtney, you've spent a lot of time in West Dallas exploring gentrification issues in that neighborhood.
About a year and a half ago, we started telling the story of a group of around 300 low-cost rental homes that were slated for closure after the city found they were no longer up to code. Many tenants ended up actually purchasing their houses, but those who decided to move couldn't really find affordable rental options, especially with all of those high-end apartments being built in West Dallas. We're going to hear now from West Dallas community activist Ronnie Mestis and tenant Joe Garcia.
I call it the wall. It's the financial wall, you know, those new apartments that are right there, you know, because it looks like it just blocks out the whole neighborhood.
If I had the money, yes. Who wouldn't? But in the process of it, you know, it's a common sense that we just can't afford it.
So people who qualify for a Section 8 housing voucher have a lot of difficulty finding landlords who will take them anywhere in Dallas. Courtney, does the city housing policy address this in any way?
It actually does. And like you said, Section 8's pretty tricky in Dallas. There are no ordinances on the books for the city or anywhere in the state, for that matter, that kind of protect against source of income discrimination when it comes to housing. So landlords aren't really under any kind of obligation to take Section 8 vouchers. So what the housing policy addresses is that it's going to provide incentive to landlords. The example that's kind of written in the policy is if a fair market rate apartment is valued at $1,100, the tenant contribution would be $406, the voucher would kick in $694, and the voucher incentive that the city would kick in would pay an additional $220, therefore giving the landlord extra reason to take that Section 8 voucher.
And Stephanie, we know that there are critics of this housing policy. What are they saying?
Large swaths of the city aren't being formally targeted as these reinvestment zones. And so there's a map that the city released, and if you look at it, huge parts of South Dallas, especially around Fair Park, aren't being targeted. So tenants and advocates in this neighborhood are wondering, why not them? That's one of the complaints. The other one is that this plan just won't do enough to address the full force of gentrification, right? So especially in a city that's also simultaneously courting big corporate headquarters like Amazon, and when that happens, you drive up property values and the market gets flooded with higher income tenants and residents and it attracts all this development. How can this policy counteract those forces? The final thing is that a lot of tenants' rights advocates say it's just still not providing enough affordable housing to the lowest income tenants. So what is affordable to someone making $40,000 a year isn't the same for someone making $18,000 to $20,000 a year. So advocates and tenants are saying there just aren't enough units to address those at the lowest end of that spectrum.
KERA's Stephanie Kuo and Courtney Collins, thanks so much for your time.
Sure. Thank you.
The Dallas City Council says it plans to review the new housing policy every 18 months. We have more details about the city's plan at KERANews.org. And throughout May, KERA is going inside low-performing campuses across North Texas in a series called The Race to Save Failing Schools. Last week, we visited Edison Middle Learning Center in West Dallas. After five straight years of not meeting state standards, the school's closing. Next year, many Edison students will go less than a mile away to Pinkston High School. Like Edison, it's had a history of struggle. Principal Dwayne Simmons arrived at Pinkston in 2014.
Some of the things that I saw were shocking. You had outdated equipment. You had old school chalkboards. We were worksheet rich. There were kids in the hallways. The instruction was very poor quality. How could you blame kids for not wanting to go to class because they were bored?
After Simmons arrived, Pinkston started to turn itself around and meet state standards. Find out how Pinkston did it. You can listen to the story at kera.org/savingschools, where you can also explore photos and student testing and demographic data of Pinkston and other schools featured in our series. Mostly cloudy skies expected later tonight. There's a chance of storms with a low around 72. At 6:30, this is KERA News.